This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 484, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
I sit alone in my four-cornered room, staring at candle. Oh, that shit is on? Let me drop some shit like this here. At night I can't sleep, I toss and turn, candlesticks in the dark, visions of bodies being burned. Four walls just staring at a nigga, I'm paranoid, sleeping with my finger on the trigger. My mother's always stressing I ain't living right, but I ain't going out without a fight.
See, hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 484. I am Josh Flanagan with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
We co-host. We're partners. In every
Everyone's equal.
Everyone is equal.
It's actually, it's a commune here.
Actually, that's actually true. We are super equal, and as there's two of us, there are sometimes impasses. We are iFanboy.
We missed that third vote.
Yeah. those are good times.
Just constant impasses.
I abstain. I don't care. That was usually my, whatever you guys want to do. Whatever you two come up with. We like comics. Every week we read our stack of comics. I was thinking about this the other day. I'm going to just divert for a second. Okay. And I know that some people don't remember Ron as well, but he was on the show last week, and he was on the show for a really long time. And I was thinking about the fact, I think one of our secrets is that if you were to ask any of us who they thought the smartest person of the three of us was, we would each say ourselves. But we could each make an argument for the other two people, and I think that's why it works.
Plus, there's just a simmering resentment underneath.
Oh, sure. But that's everything. Anyway, we read our stack of books. One of us picks the favorite book. Some weeks we think we have the pick until your partner writes that he did on the internet, and I go, oh, what am I reading all these books for? All right, I did it last week, and they call that the pick of the week, and we talk about that book and other books, and I'll do it next week is apparently the math that I'm doing here, and talk about some other stuff. We're going to read some listener mail. We'll do what we do. It should be fun. I'm going to put this ratchet down that's in my hand. We were just talking about tools, and I realize it makes noise.
You should just keep spinning it. That'll be fun for everyone.
Yeah, sorry about that, everyone. It's not cookies. That's a big callback to the early days. Here's your spoiler warning. There are spoilers. It's a review show. It would be stupid if we couldn't talk about what happened, although we do that sometimes, and it is stupid. So, you know, there we go. Connor, you're up.
The pick of the week was Secret Wars, number 1 of 8, from Jonathan Hickman, Esad Ribic. I'm not even going to attempt to say the colorist's name. I apologize. I guess I'm attempting it. Yves Forcina, and I think Chris Eliopoulos was the letter. We talked a couple of weeks ago, Josh, about how I am very optimistic about the comics I read. I'm always excited. I'm always hoping they'll be good. And so this sort of falls in that category. This is the first issue of the giant event that is going to change the Marvel Universe forever. And we have had many, despite our reputation as not liking events lately, we have had many first issue event picks of the week.
Well, the first issues usually aren't the problem.
Right, so we always were really excited for the kickoff of the story, the big story. Because for me, personally, it doesn't get any better when reading these comics than a giant event that works. I love seeing all the characters together. I love a giant story with quote-unquote stakes. I love a giant story with quote-unquote consequences. I love a giant story where quote-unquote things happen. And I love seeing all this stuff. And so I'm always hoping this is the next one that will actually be, you know, good again. And Secret Wars number one was really good on its merits. I thought it was a really great. And let me back up and say, we have not been reading the Jonathan Hickman Avengers books, much to many people's chagrins and emails and Facebook comments and Twitter comments. We dropped off that fairly early. I think you were along for that ride too, right, Josh?
I read about half of the first issue. Maybe a couple of
way back in the beginning. We read those Steve Epting ones.
Read it long. This wasn't my thing, and I
none of us read it very long. But that whole storyline apparently culminates in Secret Wars, which is fine because there's enough knowledge from those early books to give some context. I recall that the multiverse was bleeding into itself, and there was different planets were in the same space, and one of them had to die for the other to live. And I remember all that from the very beginning. And so that's really what's happening here. You don't really need to know much more beyond that. I think what Hickman does here is do a fairly good job of making this accessible for new readers. Now, if I hadn't read those early issues, I may not have any clue what's going on. I don't know.
I'm by experience probably just going to disagree with you tacitly.
But this is a big story of basically the last two multiverse Earths, as far as I can tell. And I could be wrong.
That seems right.
Earth 616, which is the Marvel Universe, and Earth 1610, which is the Ultimate Universe, and they are invading each other's space, and one has to live, so the other may die, so the other one may live. And so you've got all of these characters from both universes coming together, as well as machinations in the background with Doctor Doom and characters like that. And I don't fully understand everything that's happening here, I'll be completely honest, but I really liked the pace and the tone. The Esad Ribic art is wonderful. I had missed seeing him on Thor, and now he's back with this. And there's enough little great character moments here that kept me interested and entertained. And it seems like the big summer blockbuster you want these events to be. And hopefully it'll continue like this and not fall off the rails. But I like grizzled bearded Reed Richards. I like the, Ultimate Spider-Man making an appearance. I just hope for the best with this one, but I really did like it. I assume you didn't like it.
I did not like it. I came to a couple of. I mean, I'm not a Jonathan Hickman fan. I want to be. I recognize 100%. I'm not saying he's not good. He's really very, very good. But for some reason, whatever that flavor is, it just has not worked for me for quite a while. Here and there, little bits, but sort of over the long term, I there's a tone with it that I just tend to lose the thread of. It looked really great, obviously. I guess a couple of things that. Start off with this cast page, right?
Mm-hmm.
This thing that's a lot of people. And thank God that was there, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
But at the same time, I was looking over it, and I don't know who most of these characters are, or I don't know.
Oh, you know who most of them are.
I know that. But the version of the character that exists now, I just don't feel a ton of connection to it. It all feels very unfamiliar to me in terms of, it's like reading an alternate universe book. That's what it feels like, where I'm kind of tenuously connected to who these characters are. They've all sort of changed a lot from the time that I did care about them a lot, my point. Like they're all there and they're fine, and Hickman has a sort of detachedness that he writes into them that doesn't work for me so well with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I'm looking through all these, they've been through a lot. They're very different than the last time I came upon them. Which is fine. It doesn't necessarily have to be for me, but and then at the same time, the other thing that really gets to me is I feel like if you're going to end the Ultimate Universe, why not just end it? Like, don't make a big thing that goes into the other to explain why. This is like that Spider-Man story. It was like they had to do all the thing where they're explaining why Mary, and I just feel like, why do we always have to go through these motions?
Because the fans demand it.
That's a bad reason to tell a story.
Ultimately, to sell your books to your audience.
No, I know. I mean, I get that. But, just from a purely narrative standpoint, it doesn't excite me. And I don't know that this was bad. It wasn't bad. There's no way I can say that. I don't know. I feel like we're doing this dance again. And I think this is a thing that happens to comic book readers, at a certain point. Some, not all. I don't know, but when I read Marvel superheroes, I want to be like, oh, it's these guys. I'm hanging out with these guys. And you know, that they're, that's not that. And then they're like, one of the only ones who feels like that is Miles Morales. And we're going to change everything about him and move him somewhere else too. So at least he's still around. But, you know, it's the same thing as we were talking about the Avengers. Like, I don't love Sam as Captain America. I don't, you know, it's not quite tickling that fancy, I suppose. And then Cyclops looks stupid. I can't get over it. He looks really stupid. And I don't like what they're doing with him. I don't like that he's the bad guy. And like, well, with Scott, anything could be happening. Like, it's just they've taken things in a lot of directions that are not terribly interesting to me.
There's definitely a lot of, I mean, I don't know this version of the Hulk.
I'm going to actually talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know who this is.
I'm then going to contradict everything I just said.
Perfect. But the thing is, since it's all so foreign, I'm okay with that because I feel like I'm being dropped into this thing. And
Which is okay, but then you mix that with a writing style that doesn't necessarily click for me. Then I'm like, all right.
Yeah, no, I get that completely. But I am looking forward to this now. I want to see what happens. I mean, obviously we know, because you can't ever not know what's coming 3 months down the line. We know that it's going to end with some sort of mishmash world that's going to be created from both worlds, which, you know, is interesting. That's never really happened before. So
what happened in Crisis? I thought that's what it was.
Kind of not. I mean, you didn't really have characters from Earth 2 that. Well, then again, I don't know how this is going to end up. You didn't really have characters from Earth 2 that knew they were from Earth 2, really. Mm-hmm. Other than so I think Psycho Pirate knew about what. Like, everyone sort of forgot. It was weird. You kind of everyone sort of took LSD and dropped out and came back, and we sort of forgot it all happened. But. I liked it. I liked the big stage. I like seeing all the kids together. I liked when the X-Men showed up. I like, you know, because you don't ever see them sort of in these events, at least on equal footing as the Avengers. And we all know what's going on with the X-Men, and they're going to go away, at least into their own pocket world. And so it's going to be – I hopefully it stays fun. And I hope that you said Ribic draws the whole thing, because I just love the way it looked.
I can tell you one thing. Like Hickman is really good at keeping the stakes like, he made this feel very urgent and very huge, which is a really good thing. It's fine, and Isad Rubik draws a lot of shocked people with their mouths open.
Right.
Every page is just there's a lot of that, you know. And there's real drama, you know, that, what, you know, Sue Storm getting sucked out into
God knows where.
Like, that's a big deal. And I think I will actually – I think I'm going to read the next one. I want to know what happens. I kind of want to know what happens more than I want to read it, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But I will.
Well, because it'll affect the books you're reading, or the characters you want to read.
Sure.
So I get that completely.
Yeah. And I'm not being like mealy-mouthed and wishy-washy and just denying saying it's bad. I don't think it's bad. Like,
no, I don't think you're saying that at all.
I know. I think sometimes people go, well, he's not really saying it. Like I'm in no position to be like, Jonathan Hickman's a hack. He's clearly really fucking good.
Right.
I'm not saying that. You know, because this is a lot of juggling and a lot of interesting things. I like when Colossus threw the Hulk. just saying.
So what did you like this week, Josh?
Well, Minimum Wage, So Many Bad Decisions, Part 1, came back. And it was comforting in that it was exactly what I remembered. We picked up exactly where we left off at the end of the last miniseries. There was some worry that we might not get there. And we're back into the continuing adventures of Rob, the divorced, depressed cartoonist whose life never seems to give him a break. And it was just good to be back. It was it's the same thing where we've got that early 90s, mid-90s slice of life. All not really autobiographical, but pretty much, you know, story of the cartoonist life, and I can't get enough. Like, it's flavored perfectly for this kind of thing that I miss so much in my comics. And there is actually drama to it. You know, he's got a girlfriend, and things don't go the way that you want them to.
Really?
Yeah, but it's totally like over the top. Like, it really is almost like listening to. It's almost like listening to Randall and what's his name from Clerks, but in
Dante.
A way that, yeah, Dante, that doesn't bother me for some reason, because I'm mostly over that. But I don't know, for whatever reason, the special flavor of this, and I really like the cartooning, and that might have a lot to do with it. Lets it get away with a lot of things that I thought I was completely over. But I was glad. I'm glad to see it come back. We got another six issues. It just it has I guess a sincerity and heart to it that I really am appreciating right now.
That's good.
There's a great John Paul Leon pinup in the back.
I'd like to see him draw the book.
Yeah, yeah, that would be pretty sweet. It's so sad though. Like it's the letter page starts with, "So I did this UK comedy contest in the last issue, and then a lot of people would write in and tell me what they saw." And he's like, "And no one responded." I'm like, "Oh, you don't have to tell us that, Bob. tell us that.
It's okay."
And it was that he addressed his character exactly like Simon Pegg from Spaced. Which he said was uncharacteristic.
That's pretty subtle.
Like, it's pretty fucking subtle. Like this show that is 15 years old.
I loved that show, but I could not tell you what he was wearing. Was he wearing the same clothes in every episode?
Well, he had a jacket for the first season that had no collar in the front that really bothered me. No zipper in the front of the collar. It was like a snowboard jacket. That's regardless. That's, you know. It's fine. Huh. Sorry.
Well, all right.
So that was the thing. But that book is back. I'm really glad about it. I hope people who liked it keep buying it. I'm not going to fool myself that everybody will want to, but if you did, do not miss it. Keep buying it, keep ordering it, and keep it alive for me. This is not a Rucka Lazarus level threat. That's not what's happening here.
No, you understand the reality of the situation.
Yes, I just appreciate it. But seriously, on Lazarus, so, do not screw me over on this.
So Afterlife with Archie number 8 came out this week, and I was looking back, and number 1 came out, I think, 2 years ago. So wow. they're on a... not quite quarterly schedule with this book.
That seems fair.
Yeah, I don't mind. I mean, they have other projects to do. But this book continues to really delve into how awful and fucked up everyone is in this world. And one of the interesting things so a couple of interesting things happened. If you recall from the last issue, Cheryl Blossom killed her twin brother after some heavily implied incestuous activities, and she didn't want to do it anymore, and he wanted to continue, so she killed him.
It's amazing that this isn't fanfic.
And so the fallout of that is that the group is really weary of having this girl in their midst who, you know, came out of the woods covered in blood and leaving her dead brother behind, and so they want to have a vote to decide whether or not she gets to stay or I guess send her off to live in the woods by herself. But then there's this other part of the story in which, also we've introduced ghosts now into this. So Jughead shows up to talk to Archie, and then all the ghosts show up to fuck with, was it Reggie? Somebody, all the dead people show up to screw with Reggie. Yeah. Cause he's an asshole. So, but there's a really sort of creepy story about how, so there's a little bit of meta commentary going on where Archie is telling Betty about how he doesn't understand how this is happening because he always felt so safe in his Riverdale bubble where nothing bad ever happened. And so then they recount the story about how his mother, or was it her mother? This is Cheryl Blossom. Cheryl Blossom says her mother told a story about her grandmother who made a deal with the witches to protect Riverdale and put it in this safe bubble. But in order to do so, they had to give up one of their kids every generation. And then to the witches. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, they show, like, the kids are dying. And every generation, one of the families, like the Andrews family and the Jughead family, all lose a kid. And it was really messed up. I mean, they're really delving into some creepy stuff in this book. But it's a sort of meta way of saying, you know, the witches protected Riverdale from anything bad ever happening by being offered these sacrifices every generation. And now that's over with, so the zombie outbreak has happened.
Followed almost none of what you just said.
That's okay.
But are you still enjoying it?
Yeah. I am.
Are you enjoying it, like, enjoying it, or...
No, both. It's a good story. But I'm also constantly amazed that they're doing this to their characters.
Right.
But it's actually a good, interesting story that's going on. Like, I didn't continue reading the Sabrina book, which was not... in this story, but a different. If you recall, we talked about it. It's a horror take on Sabrina, but not set in this world. And I didn't find that interesting, so I stopped reading that.
Well, you're not a huge Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
No, but I did. But you know, I would have read it probably if it had been as interesting as this book has been. This book has been very interesting.
All right.
So and good, but it just gets every issue they just find a way to make it more weird. which I think is good. Why not? Also, Archie proposes to Betty, but she can't say yes because she's not 18 yet.
Ew. How old well, is he?
He's probably the same age.
Well, they must not live anyway.
Well, all societal rules have gone out the window now that zombies have come out. I feel like she can say yes.
Yeah. I mean, is there even like a law system that you can...
I can say this. When Archie makes the proposal, Veronica makes a face like she's drawn by Isad Rybik.
I just made that face now.
Next issue, Reggie. And since Reggie is such a huge asshole, I can only imagine that's going to be really fucked up.
Cool.
So I'll give you the update in 2016.
Well, all right then.
So now contradict yourself with the Hulk.
So guy I know, friend of mine, Aubrey Sitterson, wrote the backup story in Hulk number 16. And so I thought I would read it because I'm a good guy. And as a result, I read the first part of the story, which is written by Jerry Duggan, who I like quite a bit. Drawn by Mark Bagley, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Who I'm not as huge a fan of anymore, but you got to respect the guy. And so I'm thrown into this Hulk story that has been going on. And it's like every Avenger in the world is standing in front of the Hulk, who has like this goatee and mustache and mohawk. And he's super smart now because he'd apparently been infected with the, what's the Tony Stark virus? Extremis.
Yes.
And so now he's super intelligent. Basically, the Extremis took away all the anger issues of the Hulk, and it just left like this super intelligent being. But he is the Hulk, but he's just one of those other Hulk things. Now, we were just talking about different versions of characters. The thing of the Hulk is, there's a big history of this, thanks to Peter David, where there's sort of lots of different aspects of the Hulk that come out. And they're all out there to kick his ass. And then he just basically pulls She-Hulk into the building and they have a nice conversation and he explains where things are at. And she's like, okay, I'm on your side. And it was totally a talky issue. I really enjoyed it. It was just like one of those things, like I switched the channel and be like, I haven't watched this in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I don't know that it's a thing that I would keep reading forever.
Why did you like this more than that, but not Secret Wars?
Well, it was much less complicated. It was literally two people talking in a room the whole time. And I do have, like, I know these characters. I know She-Hulk well enough. I know, like, the fact that it is the Hulk, and you just sort of, like, what's happened to you in this time? And there's this big Hulk family, and I used to hate the Hulk. And so that I can go in now and read a little bit of it. The backup story is just sort of a fun little story where these two dudes go, and they're trying to find, is it Lyra? Yeah, Lyra. She's the Lady Hulk with the red hair. I don't remember what her backstory was. But that all came out of all that Red Hulk stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to rescue her, and they find out that she's basically conquered this world and become its ruler. And then they take her back, and she's mad about that. So she makes them into manservants. It's a little cute backup story. But it was fun. It was like a nice diversion. I think I'm probably going to read the next one. You know, this is Jerry Duggan, who, you know, along with Brian Posehn, but I suspect he's doing much of the heavy lifting, has had me reading Deadpool for a couple of years now.
Right.
So I shouldn't be surprised that it's a thing that I like. I just like the way that he writes.
A quick word about Amazon, ifanboy.com/Amazon is where you can go to help the show out. You can find a link to Amazon there, and when you click that link, you go to Amazon proper. And when any purchase that you make, you help the show out. A little bit of money comes our way, and we always appreciate everybody who does that, who makes that their link. So you don't have to go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, just go to Amazon directly. And also, people go to ifanboy.com/registration, where they become ifanboy members for $3 a month or $30 a year. That's where you can help the show out directly. And you can also make a donation there of any amount you'd like. That's how we pay for the bills, server bills, keep the website, all that old content from years and years and years stays alive because of the people who do both those things, and we appreciate those people that do that.
At the beginning, when we say it's brought to you by viewers, like, that's really true. Like, it's not even like that's literally true. So
right. Yeah. Also, Josh's oil family money.
Cooking oil. Recycled cooking oil. That's what we...
That's big money in that, actually.
Yeah. It smells like fried clams.
So one thing that's happening with Secret Wars is that a lot of books that we are reading are ending because of Secret Wars. So like Black Widow and Silver Surfer and The Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the final issue of The Punisher, I believe.
It felt like it. It felt like an epilogue.
Yeah, we thought the last issue was, but this one, I looked up, I did some research afterwards. And I believe this is the final issue of The Punisher.
iFanboy, we do research afterwards.
Sometimes. So in this issue, he sort of returns to his roots. He you know, he tried to take on the government and the military, and he decided that was just too hard. So he went back to L.A. to get back to what he used to do, which was just kill criminals and sit in traffic on the 405.
So who doesn't want to kill people then? So here's the thing. Like, there's a scene where you're watching him. He stops the car. He gets out. He holds the bad guy with a gun to his head.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wait, so is he going to do it? I mean, he has to do it, right? He did it.
Mm-hmm.
She shot him in the head in front of everybody. And I was like, I guess with the Punisher, that's the choice that you are forced to make. It's still weird, though.
Yeah, and the ending of the book was really weird, in which his cop friend, who was briefly inspired by him during the gang wars, decides he's actually not good, because he ended up killing some dirty cops and stabs him in the ribs and then kills his dog, which just seems mean.
Yeah, and, it was.
And then that's how the issue ended. He sort of staggers out into the streets, all bloody as the sun rises, I guess. And I guess that was the end. But it was weird.
It was a little odd. I mean, I think that we said this in the beginning of it. Like, it's a totally different Punisher than the one that we had just read that Greg Rucka had done.
Right.
It's a totally different take. So, to me, the fact that it ended, like, I'm like, that was a good length. That was fine. So, mm-hmm. I don't mind that. The way that Marvel's done now, like, let the story go for a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And then kill it and move on and do a different thing. That's fine. I don't want stuff to go on for years.
I'm going to have a lot fewer books from Marvel if there's nothing to replace them with this new regime, which I'm totally fine.
Well, they've got like 5 writers who I know and then a bunch of guys I've never heard of, and I don't know how that's possible.
Now, also ending Rocket Raccoon. This was the final issue of Rocket Raccoon, which is interesting because, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
It was.
That seemed to sneak up on me. I don't know why that.
Yeah, oh, 11 it.
Okay.
Yeah, Groot's coming next month. This is issue 11. This one is not. I was a bit more surprised by this because I thought Rocket Raccoon have a bit more traction in the market. I thought combination with Scotty Young would help. And he's not at all in the continuity of the world. He's in space the entire time. He never runs into anybody else but Groot, basically. So anyway, this is the final issue in which. The whole time he's been looking for information on who he is, what his race is, how he came to be, and he finally finds this book that will tell him, and he gets the key from another raccoon and decides he doesn't want to read it. And he does read it.
He did read it, and then he was like, I don't want to think about it, I don't want to know, but you read it if you want. I'm going to forget I read it and off to more space adventures.
Right.
I'm guessing with a book like this, like the sales at the very beginning were huge, 300,000 copies, something like that. They probably
it was in the loot crate thing. That's why
they probably had, you know, variant covers and blah blah. And Scotty variant covers, you know, that's right. A speculator item, and you know, people went and bought the first one, but you know, they're largely movie fans. It was really well done, mm-hmm. but yeah, the market is what the market is.
Yeah, so it was a fun 11 issue run. If you like Rocket Raccoon,
did it say who's doing Groot? Who's on the next bit? Do we know?
Oh, I don't know. I already just deleted it from my app, so I can't look. But it was a fun run on it.
And
I thought I wasn't expecting to read more than a couple of issues, but I stuck through all 11 and really enjoyed it.
I think Scotty Young did a wonderful job writing.
Yeah, he's a really, really strong writer.
Yeah, and he got the voice and tone of this down perfect. Never wavered, never let it drop. I was super impressed on that. A lot mm-hmm. of writers or a lot of guys who are known as artists come in as writers, and they don't necessarily hack it just as well, but it was great. Did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Several series ended at Vertigo. This ending.
This is the book's ending segment.
Uh-huh. Wolf Moon number 6 and The Names number 9. The last issues of those both came out from Vertigo. Apparently, this week was also the last issue of Hinterkind.
Oh, wow.
So, which is the 3 books that came out this week. They all ended. So I guess that leaves American Vampire. And I assume there's still Fables books, I guess.
The Purge happened this week.
Astro City is technically Vertigo. So
yes.
That would be that. But, it's ugly times. Wolf Moon, I actually read all of it. I did not expect
to.
Just a little werewolf story with a bit of a twist on it. Sort of a biological as opposed to a supernatural twist on it, and then a big psychological component, because everybody the wolf sort of moves around from person to person. And after they are the wolf, they remember everything that happened, and it wrecks them. So it's sort of the story of all the people who had been the wolf and how they're dealing with it afterwards to a certain extent while they try to hunt it, but they're not really sure why.
Right.
And no one can beat the wolf, basically. The wolf is very good.
Beat the wolf, Josh. The wolf beats you.
The Names, number 9, was the miniseries by Pete Milligan and Leandro Fernandez. And like Milligan, basically the beginning of it, sold like, this is the series I've been waiting to do forever. And yeah, good for him.
What was this one again? What was it about?
There's like a shadowy organization called the Names, and they control everything. And the beginning of it is a dude is killed, and his like super hot second wife like goes out to find and his like genius autistic son go out to find who is responsible, and they find this organization, and it ended weird. Like it wasn't a terribly satisfying ending. I was kind of holding out hope that by the end I'd be like, oh, that was all right, really pulled out of that dive, but he landed it. That's the best I can say. Like, it landed. And, Milligan's old school veteran, good writer. So it was okay. It was pretty good. It wasn't great.
This is your Vertigo report. It's getting sad, Josh.
You're telling me, buddy. You're telling me. Also wanted to follow up because Inhuman number 14, I think, was the pick of the week last week. This week, Inhuman Annual number 1 came out. This is literally just the next chapter. This one is drawn by Ryan Stegman. And it just sort of picks up where the other one left off. So for some reason, if you listened to last week and you picked it up, or you have been and you missed it, or you whatever, like make sure you check out Inhuman number 1. We get a much better view of what's going on with Lineage and all that stuff.
Is there a reason why this continued into an annual and not just the next issue?
I don't think so. Maybe they're going to go into the next. I don't know. I don't feel like the series is ending.
Annual is a tradition that must die.
The annual is a tradition that has died, just not in name.
Well, that's what I mean. It must go away now. Goodbye.
Yeah, but it's that same thing where they can stick a number 1 on it and feel like maybe they'll goose the sales.
It had a point back when that's where you found the big event story.
Yeah, because this is actually literally the title page is part 15 Legacy. It's literally just the next issue.
Lame.
It should just be Inhuman number 15. But it was a big,
I don't really care. I just think it has no more point now.
I really like the character who's just the big gate for a head guy.
He sounded fun.
He doesn't talk. But now because his gate is on his head, he picks people up and he throws them into his face. and they pop out where he wants them to.
Is he super strong?
He's giant.
Oh.
Like he's giant. And then there's a little rock baby.
This is not his balls.
Actually, the last page says, there is only Secret Wars. So maybe, I guess this is the end of this as it exists now. But I think they'll be able to continue it.
Yeah, a lot of books are wrapping up for Secret Wars. So maybe this one's also ending. We've had 1, 2, 3, 4, four books in a row.
Both comic book companies have been like,
five.
Out the window.
Five books in a row. It's the Purge. It's like spring cleaning. So those are the books we're going to talk about, godifamily.com. That's where you can find a post for this show. You can talk about whatever you read this week, or these books, other books, books you read that are ending also that we don't know about. You can tell us at ifamily.com.
Sure.
So let's do a bunch of emails since we have time. Some long ones, but one thing I like about these emails this week, Josh, is that much like when DC rebooted, do you remember when DC rebooted and we got all those like really panicked emails?
Mm-hmm.
We got some of those from Marvel this week. I always enjoy the panicked
sit back
emails. Not necessarily the first one we're reading, but they're coming. So okay. Cleon writes and says, I've been noticing for the past year or so that comic book podcasters, writers, critics have been meeting events with more and more disdain as the months go by. Yet DC and Marvel especially seem to be pumping them out faster at a faster and faster rate. With so many of the acclaimed series these days being things like self-contained image books or the relatively standalone superhero titles like Hawkeye, Daredevil, Moon Knight, Miss Marvel, do you think as we look forward, the big two should abandon these events and crossovers and focus more on creating unique independent stories? Or will there always be a strong market for event blockbusters despite how much we complain about them?
If I may present an analogy to you to begin.
I have one as well.
You may have heard about something called the craft beer movement.
Okay.
In which thousands of people all across the country have discovered these small microbreweries where they have delicious small batch beers that have notes of elderberry and beef and leather and tannins and
not the analogy I thought you were going with.
Yeah, right. But Budweiser still sells a shitload of beer.
More than anyone combined.
Exactly. So, you know, the people.
My analogy is. Okay. You know, you watch the Oscars or you critics best list.
That was a little entertainment related. I wanted to even take it further outside of scope, but I'm with you.
You find that movies like Birdman and Theory of Everything and Imitation Game, but movies like that in the last year's list. But then Transformers Dark of the Moon made over $1 billion at the box office. So that is why the Marvel and DC will continue to make event blockbusters, because there's a. Critics and pundits and reviewers and podcasters and whoever we are, Jamokes, you know,
I gotta remember
may not necessarily like what the mass market likes.
Those people that you're talking about, the Jamokes. We'll call them Jamokes for now. The Jamokes are hyper enthusiasts. in that we've decided to get into this, and I would like to think that when you are a hyper enthusiast and you are forced to examine and discuss and think about these things over and over, you come to appreciate things and notice them differently. Mm-hmm. Somebody asked me on Twitter if we enjoy things less because of us having to do this. And I think my answer is different than everybody else's, but my answer is no. I just enjoy some things less, but I enjoy other things much more. So, you know, you have to take...
This is different.
It is. But what I'm saying is, like, you have to, like the people who are talking about this stuff, this is all they talk about. And chances are they're not going to approach it with the same thing as somebody who isn't totally ensconced in it. And that's not good or bad, but, you know, film critic probably knows a lot more about film than most people. And so you have to wonder.
At the end of the day, most people can consume media just want to have fun.
Yes.
So the person who goes to the movies or watches TV or reads a comic, the majority just want an escapist scenario for however long they're doing it. That's something totally fine.
And something that's totally fun and kind of familiar, yeah. And doesn't, you know, like it's this thing when I was a younger reader, and you would hear somebody, either a pro or somebody who knew a lot about comics, mention some artist from the past, and they'd be like, this guy's a genius. And I'd look at it and go, I don't get it. I don't see it. You know, but eventually you do see.
You were not ensconced enough.
Yeah.
You were a junior Jamoke. You were not a full Jamoke.
You were pre-Jamoke.
Pre-Jamoke. The pre-Jamoke era.
I got to tell you, I could go for a Jamoka right now. Just a nice
Jamokachino?
Yeah, obviously.
So,
and that isn't to say, you know, we're bigger than Jesus, we're better than Jesus.
The thing is, we're saying all this on the show where the pick of the week was Secret Wars number one. So take it all as it comes.
Well, I mean, I think that as long as you have the context for what makes things good and what other people like and you know, what, you know, there's quality in all things, or there can be. So
and the thing is, if you take those books that Cleon mentioned, the sales of those books combined are not going to reach the sales of Secret Wars number one. That's why. That's why event blockbusters happened. That's why Marvel doubled down, because they sold 250,000 copies of Civil War number one. Mm-hmm. So they went, we're riding this train till it dies, and we're going to keep it going anyway.
And they're
going
to do it again, because they'll make money from it, and that's what they're supposed to be doing. And if they manage to squeeze in some good stories and some good, you know, they have. I'll tell you one thing now that we cannot deny is that because they have the ability to back up the money truck, when they do these events, they have the best people on them.
Mm-hmm.
They have the best artists that we have available in comics right now. They have the best writers who can make that into something interesting. And I don't think you can look at Secret Wars and be like, oh, he totally Michael Bayed that up. He didn't.
No.
He doesn't. That's not who that guy is. You know, so, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be one good, bad, or the other thing, but they're not going anywhere.
Yeah. All right. Edward G. writes and says,
yeah.
I don't see. see? Oh, God. If you understand that reference, email us at contact@fanboy.com. I don't see this convergent nonsense going on at DC having any emotional reverberation at all. Their entire approach to storytelling has become so meta, they forgot about core character being the way in the first place. Marvel Secret Wars number one reads to me like Marvel the End, a compliment right there, because all stories in the end line of stories were really engaging stories. The real impact for me, though, is that I'm taking all of this literally. Having started reading Marvel in 1969, with Avengers 68, I believe, Even an Android Can Cry by Roy Thomas and John Buscema, I'm wondering if, after Hickman's Secret Wars is over, what the hell's a battle world? Maybe I'll have lost the narrative thread and I'm done reading Marvel comic books. Maybe I'm not the demo or even the psychographic desired. And in the ongoing game of cultural crack, the whip, I'm about to be let go. Question, since the premise of issue one of Secret War seems to be that some things refuse to be killed, an idea or something like that, then should I just suck it up and keep the idea alive and continue reading whatever Marvel Afterlife universe is they are cooking up? I know the answer, but do you have any insight into what the hell's going on? And get off my lawn, you damn kids. Seriously, please discuss. So this is where you get the longtime readers who are feeling very scared about, because Marvel's never gone through this, right? So Marvel zombies, or I don't, fans, or whatever you want to call them, are never gone through the emotional ringer of the reboot. If this is a reboot, who knows what this is. But so this is where you start getting the anxiety level creeping in. I know people personally who are feeling this, and it's interesting.
Every time you say I know people personally, I just like, he's talking about Romo.
No, not even that, actually. But
I mean, dude said he's been reading comics since 1969. What makes you like, what else in the world are you still watching for that long or reading? Or that's 46 years. Mm-hmm. What else doesn't change its intended audience? It's weird that you're still, and I'm not saying that's bad. I'm still doing it, not as long, but half that time, which is a really long time. You know, like Saturday Night Live hasn't been on that long, but even that cast and its audience shifts and changes, you know, generationally.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe it's unrealistic to think that this won't change, although you've had a hell of a run. And also, I don't think it's really changing. It's the same, just a different flavor of it. What do you think?
I mean, things are going to change a little bit, but it's not like they're going to be all anthropomorphic animals. And you know, when this all is said and done, there's still going to be these characters.
I'd read that.
And they're still going to be fighting the good fight against evil. And that's still what's going to happen. I mean, it is what happens at DC, right? The story just continues in a slightly different way. And
but also not really. Like, not really that different. Like, it's...
Right, you know, slightly
yeah,
different.
Like, it's the illusion of change still.
Right, and things will change. I mean, the Fantastic Four book won't be there, for at least for now, and the X-Men are going to do what they're going to do on their own little place, and that's going to be slightly different. But for the most part, it's going to be the same. And it's still the same story. This is just a really bad thing that's happening. It's like someone getting a divorce, you know, like their life is different, but it's still their life.
All right, here's another thing. Secret Wars is a 31-year-old concept. This already happened.
Nothing changed after Secret Wars.
I know, but who's to say, you know, that's comics. Like, literally the promise of comics is everything changes, nothing's changing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what comics is, and as long as you have that perspective, I'm sorry, not comics, Marvel and DC superhero comics.
Well, let me sneak another email in here that I hadn't had on the script.
Okay.
That I meant to put in the script.
This has never happened.
I meant to put this in the script, but I forgot because first of all, thank everyone. We had great emails this week.
Mm-hmm.
We had way too many to choose from. So Peter writes and says, when you did your top five books a couple weeks back, almost all the books were generally new series. I think one of them was past the 20-issue mark, and almost all of them were non-superhero books. Well, there's probably a lot to be said about why Image versus whoever. I've wondered, do you think what maybe hurts superhero books is the fact that because of continued continuity, no one ever really dies? At the end of the day, reveals and all, it's generally always the hero wins, the villain's defeated, etc., etc. With Image books, you never really know what will happen, and even in comics, when someone goes belly up, it's known that it's coming, Death of Wolverine, and there are rarely big surprises. At the end of the day, does this hurt the big two? And I think this is somewhat related to Edward's email, in that what Peter is describing is basically the existential crisis that every comic fan eventually goes through. If you're reading Marvel and DC for longer than a few years, then you're going to eventually run up against this question, right?
Yeah.
These things never really change, so can I enjoy that or not? Or will I continue to read them and just complain that they never really change, but continue to read them or stop reading them?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the thing everyone runs into at some point.
Yeah, unless you change the conversation. Change the game. Robert Kirkman changed the game. I mean, yeah, I think you can clearly look at a person like me. I still read a lot of these, both because I like the artists and I want to know what's going on, and I'm doing this show and everything. But it's definitely changed for me in terms of you can absolutely tickle my nostalgic funny bone with some of these. But I know that once you know the game, once you sort of get the overview that this is what happens over and over again, and I don't think it's that the good guys always win, because that's just,
that's fiction.
That's fiction. That's the hero's journey archetype story. That's what they're doing over and over again. It's just, yeah. I mean, eventually, so how long am I going to ride this Ferris wheel?
Well, they put the philosophy in the tagline of the first superhero, mm-hmm. quote unquote first. It's a never-ending battle against truth, justice, for truth, justice in the American way, right? Mm-hmm. It's a never-ending battle. It's right there in the tagline. Mm-hmm. So you have to decide as a reader if that's something you're down with, because it's never going to end. In Marvel and DC Comics, there's never going to be a third act, really. There's going to be an illusion of it, but never really be one.
Yeah.
So is that cool? Are you cool with that? I'm cool with it. I made my peace with it long ago. I like just reading the story. I like these characters. I like seeing how they're going to defeat evil this week. And that's how that's what it is. It's a variation on a theme every week. And I may eventually get tired of it. It's certainly possible, but for now I'm not. But you have to decide that. And if you are tired of it, then you should stop reading them. And I'm not saying that as a, elitist or exclusionary. It's just if these things don't interest you, if the never-ending battle does not interest you, then it's probably better to stop reading them than to complain every week and or try to change comics into something that they're not. At least Marvel and DC Comics. Marvel and DC Comics are never going to be what Image Comics are or other comics are. They're not. They're not built that way. That's what I think.
Yeah, yeah. Or just find another way to... I mean, for me, it's about finding a different appreciation for it, finding another way to approach it. And that for me, is craft. Like, I can be entertained by the stories a little bit, but for the most part, there hasn't been too many superhero stories. And there have been. It's just they're a little more rare that are ultra-compelling in this story department long term, I suppose. Mm-hmm. You wait for moments, you wait for things that give it back to you, but at the same time, you're looking at the finest craftsman that the world has ever produced, mm-hmm. in this art form, which I absolutely believe. I think that comic book art, both in function, in the structure and storytelling of it, and the art and the way that the art's done, it's never been better. On a whole, there have been obviously geniuses. I'm not saying Jack Kirby's been surpassed, but there were never that many guys working at the same time and so much variety. So that is super fun. And yeah, I like Captain America. There's nothing wrong with that too.
Right. The thing, I think if you go back to our top five, I think a lot of it isn't, for me anyway, I'm not going to speak for Josh, has nothing to do with the idea that I'm bored with the stories. It's that I don't think that most of DC books are very good. They don't have a lot of talent on the, a lot of top talent on the books. And I don't like the direction a lot of them are going. And Marvel is running in a direction I don't like either. I don't like recreating the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the comics. I like the Marvel Cinematic Universe where it is, and I like the comics where they are, and I like them to be different. And getting rid of most of my favorite characters and replacing them with other characters doesn't make me excited. So I don't feel good about either one right now for different reasons. But that's why most of the top five books are Image books, because of that. Because I don't like superhero stories in which the hero always wins and no one ever dies.
Connor definitely still likes superhero stories.
I love them.
That's not a thing that's going away. I don't think DC is working with the same breadth of talent that Marvel is.
Right.
And I don't think either of them are working with the diversity of talent that Image is.
Right, but we also don't like the movie creep into the Marvel universe. We don't like the costumes. We don't like the characterizations. We don't like any of that.
Well, I mean, that's what I said about Secret Wars. I was like, this is all sort of familiar, but also not. And that's less. It's less interesting. I don't know. Like, if you were to be like, we're gonna place the Captain America story in 1985, I'd be like, let's do it. Like that would be what I all of the aspects of that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be totally fine with that. And I don't know if that's generational. It might just be I might just be getting too old for it changing and me not wanting to change with it,
which is fine. There are tons of back issues out there.
They will. Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, you don't have to stop reading, because I guarantee you, in the 46 years or whatever that other dude was talking about, you know,
Edward G.
You know, you could read through all of those again, and you'd probably get quite a thrill.
You know? Yeah, I'm rereading stuff now that I have definitely read before and don't remember any of it, because it's been a long time. So that's great. You can do that. I just recently picked up the Kurt Busiek, George Perez Avengers Omnibus because I was so jazzed from the movie, and I don't remember any of those stories, really. I remember some of the highlights, but I looked through it, and I was like, I don't remember anything that's going on here. This is going to be great when I get a chance to reread it. So, you know, if I stopped reading comics tomorrow...
He's got the powers and abilities of three men. Ten's too many. We're talking about say what you will about triathlon, but he stuck with me.
But what three men is my question? Like three weak men?
Like three of me?
Three strong men.
That's just like a normal dude.
Like three men with scoliosis?
Is it okay to laugh at that? I don't even know.
Yeah, I was thinking of our friends specifically.
Oh, okay.
But like three of him is not that impressive.
Yeah.
You know, three Van Niels?
Jeez.
He doesn't listen.
You went too deep, Connor.
So, anyway.
You can all pick out three of your friends who, if you combine them into one quote-unquote super being, wouldn't feel so super, is what we're saying.
Right.
I don't know how we started talking about triathlon, but it was more fun than what we were talking about before.
So, Cleon...
I know that much. He shall be Cleon, and he shall be a good man.
Sorry. Cleon had a different question. Edward, I think... Give it a shot after it's all over and see. You may not like it, and therefore you could stop. And you can feel good about stopping, but maybe you will like it. And it's just the next chapter in a journey of these characters that you like. Peter, got to decide for yourself if you can dig on the Neverending Battle. If not, then there's plenty of books out there that aren't the Neverending Battle for Truth, Justice, and the American Way. They're never going to end.
Well, here's the question. I think a lot it's like, do you like comic books or do you like superheroes? You can like both, but some people conflate them.
Right.
Find your joy.
Now we got an art question, Josh.
Woohoo!
I think we should do one of these.
Eventually, this is going to make me look really stupid.
Well, that's awesome. Let's continue. Hugh Bear says, I'm in my 30s. I've been reading comics for maybe a year now that I have more steady income.
He decided he's French?
Well,
you're just going to go with Hubert. You're just going
to Hubert.
Hubert.
I like Hubert. He's more mysterious that way. And sexy. Mm-hmm. I'm in my 30s and I've been reading comics for maybe a year now that I have more steady income. I'm really loving a lot of the stuff that Image puts out, and I want to love stuff from the big two, but one thing I can't get over is fill-in artists. I can understand that they need to meet a deadline and one artist can't produce fast enough, but it is rather jarring when I'm reading a trade and come upon fill-in artists, especially when the styles vary. Am I being too whiny? Does this bother you? There are several other reasons I'm not reading as much big two, but the fill-in artists might be the top.
Comes with the territory.
It is what it is.
Yeah, this is a fact of the game. This is like you're watching sports. I'm all about analogies. I got beer analogies. I got sports analogies.
You're becoming a man.
Yeah,
you're
totally.
In the woods and you got tools and you're
totally
beer and watching the sports.
So you're watching sports and a dude is injured or he's been arrested on some sort of domestic violence charges. It you know could happen.
Right.
They got to bring another guy in there to fill out the roster. And he's not as good, but you need him to play the game.
Okay, the game's got to be played.
It's all in the game, yo.
It's all in the game. Changing the game.
That's what it is. And you just have to hope that, that it doesn't disrupt everything too much. And fill-in artists have gotten better.
And the thing is, the companies are damned if they do and damned if they don't.
True.
Because they've tried both strategies. Neither one pleased the audience, shockingly. The first strategy was to let the books be late. And let the artists take their time doing it, and people freaked out the books never come out. The second is to use fill-in artists to keep the books coming out every month like clockwork. And, you know, they use a combination of the two. Obviously, we just talked about Afterlife with Archie, and Hawkeye still hasn't come out. Like, there's still some books that they allow them to come out whenever they want to.
But they also use the strategy of this is more of a Marvel thing of recent years, but is to do arcs with alternating artists to
right.
sort of
that's
keep
definitely
that
Marvel's thing. DC's thing when they came out with New 52 was these books are going to come out every month, and we're going to use a stable of artists to make sure it happens.
We're going to hire these largely uninspiring people who will be on time every time.
These largely uninspiring people from South America and Spain.
Yeah.
So that was their strategy, and that you know it is suck because. What Hubert with his cigarette and his scarf is describing is that he has Phil and Artist Ennui. Is that you know, years later, it's not going to matter if the books came out on time when you're reading the trade. Mm-hmm. You know, you're reading the trade, you want this experience, you want this to be contained with one artist and one writer, and you don't care that 10 years ago they had to fill in and get a guy because the book was going to be late.
They're aiming their revenue targets for issues.
Oh, I totally get it, but that is the downside. Is like a book like Infinity Gauntlet, which is going to be a big deal coming up because of the movies, you know, started off with George Perez and ended with Ron Lim. Now, I was a big Ron Lim fan back when the book was coming out, but I was still super bummed that George Perez didn't finish. And now when I look at the collection, I get super bummed that he didn't do the whole thing because it makes it slightly less special. But that's fine.
Sometimes, though, there's fill-ins, and then there's the change of artists where they're like, we couldn't keep that other guy. He had to go somewhere. It always makes me think of Starman, which starts off with Tony Harris, and he's great and is iconic and is you know, a thing that is perfect and unique. And then Peter Snaberg takes over. Peter Snaberg takes over, and
Peter IKEA bookcase.
They decided to not go with somebody similar, but to go somebody with a completely different direction.
It worked.
That is also great. It doesn't take away from it at all. But you know, if I was reading The Watchmen, and all of a sudden they finished the Symmetry issue, and the next guy is Ron Lim, I'm like, oh, but
yeah,
you know.
It makes it less special. It just does. Yeah. They're in a no-win situation. Mm-hmm. So they can – Marvel's, I think, got the right idea right now, which is to do arcs with a team and then do another team.
But, you know, we've said this before. There's a bunch of guys. There's, you know, Frank Quitely, David Aja. Take what I can get.
Absolutely. Are the guys that they let go. They let run.
So we're going to have to let you go. But I'm really good at this.
I don't even work here.
Seriously, I'm freelance.
I can go anytime I want. So
this question is, you know, it's a philosophical question more than anything, but, you know, qu'est-ce qu'on fait?
So thank you, Hubert, Peter, Edward G., and Cleon for writing in.
That is easily my favorite grouping of names maybe ever in aggregate.
But great emails, and we got tons more we couldn't even get to, so we'll be... reading those over the next couple of shows.
You have a t-shirt that's just like Edward G., Peter, and Cleon.
If we were still making t-shirts, I would lobby.
That's a very low market possibility. Looks like we sold four of them. So, we read the names here. Yeah, it's those guys.
So email us at contact@ifanboy.com and tell us where you're from, you sons of bitches.
You know what? Or let us make it up, which seems to be more fun.
We will make it up. If we don't, and then don't get mad when we use the wrong accent for you if you don't tell us where you're from.
Yeah.
Email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, 226-2697. And we did an Avengers Age of Ultron podcast, as Josh mentioned, last week with our old buddy and co-host and co-founder Ron Richards. And we had a lot of fun doing it. Despite the disparate opinions in the film, I thought the show was really fun to listen to.
It was fun to record.
So you can go back on the feed and listen to that if you've seen the movie. A lot of people seeing it for the first time late or seeing it again, haven't listened to the show yet, go ahead and listen to that. I highly recommend it.
I like that. People in the middle of this week were like, oh, I'm finally getting to go see Avengers. Like, we're used to things way too fast. It's been out a half of a week.
Finally. Can you believe I waited till Monday? It came out Friday. It's not.
Oh, we're doomed. Head over to ifanboy.com, comment on this show, talk about this week's books, find all of our other podcasts, like the Avengers podcast. It's all there at ifanboy.com. You can follow all the action at facebook.com/ifanboy and at ifanboy on Twitter. That's where you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan and at C.S. Kilpatrick.
If you like the show or do not like the show,
whatever.
What does it matter to us? However, you can write a review in iTunes or... maybe tell somebody I would maybe go in a hot air balloon up in the air and drop the leaf slits. If you want to spread the word, that's always helpful across your social media or if you talk to people in real life. I know no one's calling anyone, but you know, it's fine. Do that. That's helpful.
What is this thing that rings on my desk?
Oh, it's the thing that I... Oh, why are you calling?
It's the worst thing that ever happened to me.
So, until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Je suis.
Is there one tear rolling down your cheek?
I don't care. I'm just too
disaffected.
Yep, disaffected was totally the word I couldn't think of. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.